The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hello listeners, and welcome to this week's episode of The Conspiracy Vault. This week we will be talking about the Earth, specifically the theory of the Earth being hollow. Who was responsible for this theory? His name was Edmund Halley, the same Halley that has a comet named after him. But how did such a well-educated man come to such a conclusion? What evidence could he have possibly found that the Earth is in fact hollow? Perhaps his claims held some substance in the 17th century. Britannica.com tells us a little bit of Edmund Halley's early life. The website says, Edmund Halley was born November 8, 1656 in Haggerston, near London, to a wealthy merchant, salter and soap maker. English astronomer and mathematician, Halley was the first to calculate the orbit of a comet that was later named after him. Halley began his education at St. Paul's School in London. He had the good fortune to live through a period of scientific revolution that established the basis of modern thought. He was 4 years old when the monarchy was restored under Charles II. 2 years later, the new monarch granted a charter to the informal organisation of natural philosophers originally called the Invisible College, which then became known officially as the Royal Society of London. Halley entered Queen's College, Oxford, in 1673, and there was introduced by letter to John Flamsteed, who was appointed Astronomer Royal in 1676. On one or two occasions, Halley visited the Royal Greenwich Observatory where Flamsteed did his work, and there he was encouraged to study astronomy. Influenced by Flamsteed's project of using the telescope to compile an accurate catalogue of northern stars, Halley proposed to do the same for the southern hemisphere. With financial assistance from his father and from King Charles II, an introduction to the East India Company, he sailed in November 1676 in a ship of that company for the island of St. Helena, the southernmost territory under British rule, in the South Atlantic. Bad weather frustrated his full expectations, but when he embarked home in January 1678, he had recorded the celestial longitudes and latitudes of 341 stars, observed a transit of Mercury across the sun's disk, made numerous pendulum observations, and noticed that some stars apparently had become fainter since their observation in antiquity. Halley's star catalogue, published late in 1678, was the first such work to be published containing telescopically determined locations of southern stars, and it established his reputation as an astronomer. In 1678, he was elected a Fellow of the Royal Society and, with the intercession of the King, was granted the MA degree from the University of Oxford. In 1684, Halley made his first visit to Isaac Newton in Cambridge, an event that led to his prominent role in the development of the theory of gravitation. Halley was the youngest of a trio of Royal Society members in London that included Robert Hooke, the inventor and microscopist, and Sir Christopher Wren, the famous architect, both of whom, with Newton at Cambridge, were attempting to find a mechanical explanation for planetary motion. Their problem was to determine what forces would keep a planet in forward motion around the sun without either flying off into space or falling into the sun. Since these men were dependent upon their scientific stature for both livelihood and sense of achievement, each had a personal interest in being the first to find a solution. This desire for priority, a propelling motive in science, was the case of much lively discussion and competition between them. Although Hooke and Halley had reasoned that the force keeping a planet in orbit must decrease as the inverse of the square of its distance from the sun, they were not able to deduce from this hypothesis a theoretical orbit that would match the observed planetary motions, despite the incentive of a prize offered by Wren. Halley then visited Newton, who told him he had already solved the problem. The orbit would be an ellipse, but that he had mislaid his calculations to prove it. Encouraged by Halley, Newton then expanded his studies on celestial mechanics into one of the greatest masterpieces produced by mind of man, the Principia. the Royal Society decided that Mr. Hayley undertake the business of looking after it and printing it at his own charge, which he proceeded to do, tactfully subdued a priority dispute between Newton and Hooke, edited the text of the Principia, wrote laudatory verse in Latin for the preface to honour the author, corrected the proofs and saw it through to press in 1687. It would be around the same time that Edmund Halley would announce to the world his newest theory, that the earth is in fact hollow. But how did he come to this conclusion? Well, part of this theory was based off Newton's conclusions in his Principia, most notably the part that says, quote, the mass of the moon will be the mass of the earth as 1 to 26 approximately. Halley believed that 4/9 of the earth was completely hollow. His other reasonings was that earth's magnetic field sometimes showed inexplicable variations. And this was because there were other magnetic fields around it, causing gravitational pulls. According to a book on conspiracies by Charlotte Grieg, titled History's Greatest Plots, Collusions and Cover-ups, Halley theorised that as the Earth's layers cooled, another layer would break off and expand. He believed this happened a number of times, creating rings inside the Earth that all moved independently from one another, much like the rings of Saturn, but with a nesting doll idea of the rings going down in size. Halley likened these rings to Venus, Mars and Mercury inside, and that they were held in place by gravity but lined with magnetised fields, which explained how the shells would move in opposing directions. The book by Charlotte Grieg goes on to say that Halley also suggested that each shell was lit by luminous gas and that the aurora borealis, or northern lights, were evidence of this gas escaping from the North Pole. Halley suggested that these shells were also inhabited. He never specified which types of life forms lived there, but believed that vegetation could grow inside the earth along with other life forms because light was being refracted from the holes at each pole. People didn't believe Halley at first, and his initial announcement of the theory went pretty much ignored, but he stood by his research and continued to spread the news that the earth was in fact hollow. Eventually, Halley made 3 government-funded voyages for the improvement of navigation, the earliest having a strong claim to being the first publicly funded expedition for purely scientific purposes. Halley made 2 voyages round the Atlantic Ocean, primarily to measure magnetic declination, and a 3rd voyage to survey the tides in the English Channel. His logbook for these voyages covered the following periods. Voyage 1, 20th of October 1698 to the 11th of July 1699. Voyage 2, the 16th of September 1699 to the 10th of September 1700, and Voyage 3, the 14th of June 1701 to the 16th of October 1701. He was said to have had these 3 tasks on these voyages. 1. To measure the variations of the compass in order to identify a general theory that would be of use to navigators. 2. To ascertain the longitude and latitude of the places he visits in order to improve maps and charts. And 3, to seek the coast of the Terra Incognita in the southern Atlantic. Halley set out on his first voyage from Deptford on October 20th, 1698, returning to England towards the end of June 1699. He sailed again from Deptford September 16th, 1699, this second voyage terminating at Longreach. The two voyages together extended over the Atlantic Ocean, from 50 degrees north to about 52 degrees south. Halley's expedition is memorable as being the first scientific one set out by any country with a specific object of ascertaining the direction in which a compass sets itself at various places. It was the first ocean magnetic survey. The expedition fully justified itself, not only in the results it immediately obtained, but by the interest given to further investigation in magnetism and other subjects. It seems strange, therefore, that Halley, though a prominent member of the Royal Society, published no report on his work. He appears to have been satisfied with the graphical representation of his magnetic results, as shown on his famous chart.
The future is a hefty responsibility, and not one that we take lightly. But then, taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
The first successful one of its kind, giving the lines of equal magnetic declination. So after Halley's three voyages, he had contributed hugely to science with the documenting of his findings in the Atlantic, with his looking into magnetic fields and longitude issues with compasses that caused thousands to get lost at sea. But he never did find the pole holes. He was never able to enter the inside of the Earth himself. But others would try in his place. Charlotte Grieg's book goes on to say, one of the most notorious hollow Earth theorists was Cyrus Reid Teed, who took the theory one step further by claiming that the Earth was a completely hollow sphere, with a great human civilization living inside it. He founded a cult in Florida and declared himself to be Koresh, a messiah, before he died, in 1908. Outlandish as his ideas sounded, some aspects of physics and mathematics could be employed to support them, and a few scientists continued to investigate his ideas after his death. By the end of the 19th century, as well as into the 20th, claims about the existence of a highly developed ancient civilization under the Earth's crust continued to abound. Not surprisingly, the idea of a master race proved especially popular among Nazi sympathizers. There was even a theory that Adolf Hitler had escaped to join them, via Antarctica, in spacecraft, after his defeat in the Second World War, and was still alive many years later. Although Halley had inspired these voyages, trips and logs, he did go on to leave a legacy behind. In 1704, Halley finally became a professor of geometry at the University of Oxford after missing out on this prestigious appointment earlier in his career. He published Synopsis Astronomia Cometicae, a synopsis of the astronomy of comets, in 1705. This work detailed the parabolic orbits of 24 comets that had been observed from 1337 to 1698. It also stated that the comet sightings of 1531, 1607 and 1682 were the same comet, which orbits the Sun every 75 to 76 years, and he correctly predicted it would return in 1758. When this comet did return, it became known as Halley's Comet. He died on January 14, 1742, aged 86, and sadly did not live to see the return of the comet that was named in his honour. Halley's Comet will appear next in the sky in the year 2062. An article on BBCnews.com, written by Chris Baraniak, describes how we know exactly what is inside the Earth's core and why it isn't hollow. The article from August 2015 reads, Humans have been all over the Earth. We've conquered the lands, flown through the air and dived to the deepest trenches in the ocean. We've even been to the moon, but we've never been to the planet's core. We haven't even come close. The central point of the Earth is over 600 kilometres down, and even the outermost part of the core is nearly 3,000 kilometres below our feet. The deepest hole we've ever created on the surface is the Kowalid Superdeep Borehole in Russia, and that only goes down to a pitiful 12.3 kilometres. All the familiar events on Earth also happen close to the surface. The lava that spews from volcanoes first melts just a few hundred kilometres down. Even diamonds, which need extreme heat and pressure to form, originate in rocks less than 500 kilometres deep. What's down below all that is shrouded in mystery. It seems unfathomable, and yet we know a surprising amount about the core. We even have some idea about how it formed billions of years ago, all without a single physical sample. This is how the core was revealed. We can estimate Earth's mass by observing the effect of the planet's gravity on objects at the surface. It turns out that the mass of the Earth is 5.9 sextillion tons. That's 59 followed by 20 zeros. There's no sign of anything that massive at the surface. The density of the material at the Earth's surface is much lower than the average density of the whole Earth, so that tells us there's something much denser, says Simon Redfern of the University of Cambridge in the UK. Essentially, most of the Earth's mass must be located towards the centre of the planet. The next step is to ask which heavy materials make up the core. The answer here is that it's almost certainly made of iron. The core is thought to be 80% iron, though the exact figure is up for debate. Despite scientific research in the modern day suggesting that they do know what is inside the Earth's core, this doesn't stop people speculating about the Earth being hollow. An article on Vice.com titled A Journey to the Centre of Modern Earth Hollow Theory reads, a massive update on the hollow Earth theory came at the start of the 1800s when a soldier and scholar named John Cleves Sims, Jr. proposed that there were several entrances to the hollow Earth. I declare the earth is hollow and habitable within, containing a number of solid concentric spheres, one within the other, and that it is open at the poles 12 or 16 degrees. I pledge my life in support of this truth and am ready to explore the hollow. If the world will support and aid me in undertaking, Sims wrote in 1818. Moving towards the 20th century, the idea lost a little bit of its steam when it was essentially debunked for the first time by some meddling scientists. As these theories often do, however, Hollow Earth managed to carry on. The theory was still around, but was essentially taken over by the science fiction community. The theories range, but a typical description of what modern-day Hollow Earthers believe is that the interior consists of multiple environments which are punctuated with exotic and extinct animals, and sometimes aliens. In many of the theories, these inner world inhabitants are either super advanced or have achieved some form of utopia. Others say that the world has been colonized by missing explorers. In almost all of the theories, the inner worlds are presented as strongly superior to ours. It's not surprising that some still clutch to Hollow Earth theory, because for many, the modern theories have a religious bent to them. In these theories, it is typically put forward that the lost tribes of Israel inhabit the Hollow Earth. An author by the name of Rodney Clough wrote in his 2008 book, Our Living Hollow Earth, that the tribes were taken to the Hollow Earth, which is where, luckily enough, heaven and hell are also located. The most prominent of the modern-day journeys was the proposed voyage to Hollow Earth, which was set to take place in 2007. Clough and other theorists were certain of its success that they even built an itinerary for their trip. The voyage cost $20,000 to take part in and was supposed to take place in 2007 from the 26th of June to the 19th of July, setting off from Moscow on their third day. The first 2 days are for travelling and sightseeing. On the fourth day, they were to fly to Murmansk, Russia, where they would board a Russian icebreaker and make their way towards the North Pole. Once they arrive on the ninth day, they would spend 3 days searching for the opening. It gets a little eccentric past this point. From here on out, they would travel up the Hiddekel River to the city of Jihu, before taking a monorail trip to the city of Eden to visit Palace of the King and the Inner World. After spending their time in Eden, they would make their trip home. If, God forbid, they didn't find the entrance, they did have a backup plan. Please note that if we are unable to find the polar opening, we will be returning via the new Siberian islands to visit skeleton remains of exotic animals thought to originate from inner Earth, reads a note at the bottom of the itinerary. Sadly, the planning expedition never worked out. One of their leaders, Steve Curry, died of brain cancer, explained Clough. The bad luck continued. According to Clough, another leader was killed after his plane flew into a mountain, and the third had to pull out because the largest investor in his company threatened to pull funding if the man didn't walk away from his Hollow Earth beliefs. The group has attempted a few more voyages, but the plans just keep unravelling. That said, Clough isn't opposed to another attempted voyage. They just need a leader. It couldn't be him, though, he said, as he's an author, not an adventurer. There are people out there. There are tons of people who have expressed interest in this expedition, if we can't get it off the ground, said Clough. I don't think there's a whole lot of people out there, certainly not in the millions, but maybe in the thousands. So what do you think? Would you travel to find the holes in the poles? Is this theory plausible? As always, you can contact me on cultvaultpodcast@gmail.com or follow me on Twitter and Instagram at cultvaultpod. I'm your speaker, Casey, and this has been The Conspiracy Vault.